Mini episode 1671 of the FDH Lounge is brought to you by Sportsology, delivering unconventional columns and webcasts about sports, TV, music, movies, and more. Follow them on the web at sportsology.com.
The FDH Lounge. You want to schedule your life around it.
A long time ago, on a gloomy, wet Cleveland spring night, two men stand alone amidst the late night drizzle. Their voices echo across the vacant station parking lot as they debate the merits of the great American radio show that have been missing for far too long. On that night, an idea was born. That idea became the FDH Lounge. Welcome to the FDH Lounge.
Hello, everyone. Welcome to FDH Lounge Mini Episode 1671. This is FDH Managing Partner Rick Morris coming at you. And we have back with us two of our favorite FDH Lounge dignitaries, the same folks that we got on before the 2023 World Series to do a preview. We have them back here today. Of course, my good friend, Ken Detweiler, for whom I was a sidekick on Life's a Pitch with Ken Detweiler at the late lamented Sports Talk Network in the 2000s. Kenny D, always here to talk baseball with us. Ken, great to have you back on, my friend, as always.
I'm always happy to be part of this. Whatever we were going to call it, and we're here too. So now it's like, I don't know, Huey, Dewey, and Louie here.
Oh, absolutely, absolutely. And part of our three-man booth here for this one is, as I always say, Philly media legend, great friend of the show, very, very well-respected FDH Lounge dignitary, and currently can be heard as part of the Callous Remarks podcast, along with our great friend and fellow FDH Lounge dignitary, Steve Callous. I speak, of course, of Joe Stazak. And Joe, I know it's got to be easier to come on and talk about the World Series than it was the LCS, for which, again, I am grateful from the bottom of my heart that you were willing to come on and do that, my friend.
Man, you guys aren't happy unless you're torturing me every week, huh? I mean, what's up?
I'm going to send you some Guardians gear.
Well,
no, it's always a pleasure. I told you it's therapeutic, you know, and we could all talk about the recent death of our club and
yes.
Continue on there. So it's still sitting shiv over here. So no, we're all good. We're all good.
Well, yeah, Joe, we got a new manager.
Oh, that's yeah. Right.
Yeah.
Don't get me started, Joe.
Well,
hang on. You guys have a nice night.
Yeah. Well, Joe, you could return the favor with me if it was your Philadelphia Flyers last night on TNT rather than the New York Rangers sticking it to my Detroit Red Wings on national TV. You could return the favor if that was your team.
But, you know I will.
Yeah, that was certainly painful. Not one of the finer nights for the winged wheel, unfortunately. But again, a game like that leaves me feeling like fellow FDH Lounge dignitary Derek Allen watching his Arizona Diamondbacks in the World Series here, albeit a team that he, as we pointed out in the preview, basically gravy trained when October came along. So there's only so much you can feel bad for the guy on that one there. And of course, him doing the video on TikTok with his new wife. Congrats to the happy couple, him and our great friend Maya Master, the $1 trillion baby, where she was gloating because she had gravy trained the Texas Rangers. So what do you know? You know, even Zoomers can grow to love the game if their team is in it, right? Isn't that a beautiful thing? The game can reach bandwagon jumpers of every generation, gents. It certainly can.
Of course.
But, you know.
Oh, that's great.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Well, you know, I'm going to start with you, Joe, because coming into the series, you gave us a lot to look at coming out of the National League Championship Series and Arizona getting Philadelphia to chase as many pitches as they did. And again, all of us ended up picking Texas to win. I did in six games, you guys did in seven games. And it's one of these things where I feel like everything you said was pretty prophetic, Joe, in the sense of when you're facing, not that Texas is the most disciplined team in baseball, but certainly more disciplined than Philadelphia was. And they just weren't going to chase as much. And Arizona was in trouble because of it.
Yeah. I thought game one was just I don't know how many people in Philly watch it. You know, I told you guys I'm going to watch it, and I watched every inning, and it ended up being a pretty entertaining game. But I'm watching Texas, and you know, I'm always wondering, like, they always throw those questions out. Would you rather, you know, feel like, you know, would you rather think, do you feel better that Arizona lost or Texas won? Who cares? I don't care. My team's not in it. I don't care. But I'm watching this game, and I'm watching the Diamondbacks do what they did to the Phillies, and they're just scraping and clawing in game one, and they have a 2-run lead, and here comes Seawald. You know, he's not Mariano Rivera, but he's, you know, this year's version for, let's pretend for a little while. And he comes in, and our big guys, you know, we went down without much of a fight in game seven in the last three innings. And of course, Tavares walks, and then I think there was an out. And then, of course, Corey Seager, their big guy, or I guess our version of Bryce, their version of Bryce Harper, boom, hits a tie, you know, 2-run home run. And then their other star, Garcia, who got hit in the ninth inning with a 92-mile-an-hour pitch, looked like he might not return that night. He hits a home run. He continues his torrid pace in the 11th inning, and their two big stars pull that team up by the bootstraps, win game one, and they were off from there. I know the Diamondbacks came back, God bless them, they did their thing in game two, and it wasn't much of a game, won like 9-1 or something like that. But then, you know, Texas goes on the road from there. But I mean, that's a 2-game swing. You're down 1-0 or you're up, that's a 2-game swing right there. And their stars showed what stars do or what need to do in games like that to win championships. And you know, I was like, that is so prophetic watching that. I don't know if anyone caught that, you know. I know you guys did, but I'm talking about the, you know, everyone here pretty much switched on their Eagles, you know, channels after the Phillies got aced. But I'm watching it going, I hope that's a lesson to, and I don't think it got lost on us. We know our stars didn't come through. 1-for-28, you know, I've talked about Schwarber and Harper, Turner and Castellanos in game 6 and 7, but that's what you need to do. And you need to have your stars, your $300 million guys, come up big in big spots. That's what they did. 2-game swing, and you know, it's kind of sent them off and running.
Exactly, and this is one of these things where both of those home runs that you referenced in game one, and looking at this here on baseball-reference.com, I'm always interested to see out of some of the modern advanced statistics that come out here, win probability added. And Corey Seager was number one in the series. His home run in game one added a 14.79% chance of the Rangers winning the series. Wow. Second was Garcia at 13.03% with a home run in the same game. Corey Seager, three times in the top 10 because he had a home run in game three that added a 6.9% chance of winning the series. And he had the ninth most important at-bat in game four, the home run off of Kyle Nelson. That added a 3.94% chance of winning. Corbin Carroll, unsurprisingly, showing up here with the sixth most important at-bat, that triple to center field that he had in game one, adding a 5.16% chance of winning. And that's one of those things. I'm just going to follow up with you for a second here, Joe, as far as it goes with Corbin Carroll. Much like the National League Championship Series, and maybe it showed out a little bit more so in the World Series because the Diamondbacks lost in five, but relatively unimpressive statistics for him for the series. But if you're watching the games, it feels like lies, damned lies and statistics, because he made a number of plays in the series that are memorable. I think I probably remember each and every one that he did, and maybe I'm blocking out all of the empty at-bats.
No, he was always doing something. He was always doing something, little things. He did that against us too, you know, when he wasn't coming up in terms of the real numbers. I mean, a sac fly he had in game seven with two outs, and you know, he does a lot of the little things right, and he makes plays in right field. He throws to the right base, and I think you're right. Just because he's, you know, he might have had some at bats that we wish he would have had against us. He did a lot of the other little things right. That's what you do. And again, he's a young player. He's 21 years old, and he just the moment doesn't get too big for him. He actually thrives on it. But you know, it's baseball. Listen, it's baseball. You know, some guys go cold all of a sudden for no, you know, like major players. You know, like Barry Bonds never was postseason, but for whatever reason, they didn't pitch to him. But some guys just, you know, you're on a streak, you go cold. But hey, listen, he got him there, and he still, you know, was still doing some of the little things right. He didn't let the bats get him down. So he's just a ball player. He's just an all around, you know, he's an awesome ball player. Oh, love to have him on your squad.
Oh, yeah. As far as a guy stepping right in, making an impact immediately, I mean, the analogy that comes to my mind is Wembanyama, somebody that's one of the biggest stars in the game in year one. He's right there. He's making it happen. They wouldn't be, if he wasn't already a franchise player in year one, they wouldn't have even sniffed the World Series. No way, no freaking way. And that's a thing where, you know, when looking at this, you know, Texas with their young talent, Josh Jung with the fifth most important hits, percentage wise, 5.62% chance of swinging the series that he had with one of his at bats. So this is a thing in looking at this, Ken, where ultimately it was, as we expect the World Series to be a showcase for the stars, and while these two teams weren't necessarily as deep as potentially Atlanta or some of the other teams out there, they're the first ones that come to mind, potentially also Houston as well, Texas especially with some of their injuries. I mean, they come in with a very much diminished Max Scherzer without any Jacob DeGrom in there. This was a thing where maybe less, you know, super luminescent superstars than you might have if it was other combinations of teams. But Ken, it seemed like the big stars showed up, you know, pretty well, especially for Texas.
Yeah, I think Texas. Well, first of all, let me just, because the three of us talked the last time before the series started here. Can somebody tell me in God's name why they keep pitching to Seager?
I said the same thing.
Yeah.
I said, why they pitch this guy?
Jesus loves the ball. I'm telling you.
Yeah.
I'm sitting here, and I don't have a rooting interest, just like the rest of us here in this conversation. I'm just saying, God, talk about a special stupid. Man, oh, man. And then I'll just get back to what you asked me, Rick. I just look over here in Cleveland here, guys, and you can see my red face because I'm still burned about that. I'm a high school coach, a travel coach all these years, but even I know you don't continue to do this unless you're Pete Rose and you have money on the game. I just don't get it. I mean, this is a world freaking series, but oh well, I'll stop there. But We talk about, or I look at the lineups, and I was looking at the lineups today because I know we were going to be visiting today here. And I'm looking at one thing that I've always done, again, forget about my little rant about don't pitch to this guy. He could be a Hall of Fame or something. He probably will. Seager will be a Hall of Famer someday. The way he's gone and his records. But I just don't get how even, I don't know if the Diamondbacks thought they were going to be the 69 Mets or something.
I know what you're going to say. Well, sorry, I'll let you go.
But that's all right. I'm looking at the lineup, and again, whenever I put together a lineup, and I'm not even comparing myself with this. I love watching the strategies, how these guys are thinking. It's like a chess game, and it should be. You're always thinking ahead. What are we going to do in the third inning? Where are we going to be in the fourth? And so forth, which is what I love. But I'm looking at a lineup of Semien, Seager, Carter. Whoa. For a rookie, this guy, did they ever get him out in the series?
Yeah.
I mean, honestly, gosh. Garcia, who wasn't there, but, and then I hear, and I wasn't aware of this, but he's like a version of Big Poppy. Nobody wanted the guy.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
And all of a sudden he's there. Jung, Lowe, who kind of took a out there, but yeah, for the most part, hitting wise. And then Duran and the catcher, if I'm saying his name correctly.
Uh-huh.
I look at the number five hole hitter whenever I'm playing you, Joe, or you, Rick.
Yeah, you always say that.
I always say that. How good, and let's not even go down to the Guardians. I don't even think they have it. Down the five. I just ought to go back up to number one and just forget the rest of those appleheads. But I just, I'm looking at this lineup and these guys are solid for next year too if they can hang on to these guys as far as the Rangers go.
Sure.
But, and you know, the other thing with the Rangers too, and maybe it's just me because I was thinking about some of these teams have had two pitches. But I'm sitting here thinking, the Rangers, they only had two pitches. They didn't have DeGrom out there.
Right.
They didn't have John Gray came on and did a phenomenal job. Why they kept Scherzer out there is beyond me, too. Yeah. That's another. But I don't have four World Series in my record, so
Yeah.
It's just I don't get it. And the relief pitchers, for the most part, sucked a big tomato as far as I'm concerned.
Yeah.
I mean,
that's true.
They did.
That's true.
So, I'll shut up. That's why I little rant there. And Lavello, and he got outmanaged. So I'll shut up right there. And
he did. He absolutely did. By the way, side note on Cleveland. This is a very inside joke to anybody that lives in Cleveland here, but there's an old Hal Leibowitz column. I'm still waiting on Bernardo Brito to come up from the minor leagues and be that power hitter that can be in the five spot. that hasn't happened yet.
Betancourt,
so, yeah,
right?
Exactly.
Maybe we're on our way.
Yes. You know, but that's a thing where in looking at that, and the construction of the lineup, again, we talked about this coming in. I mean, we expected that Bochy was probably going to, outmanage Lavello. And it's nothing against Torrey Lavello. He's a fine manager who got a lesser squad to the World Series on paper, certainly than what Bochy had to work with. So I certainly understand that. And Corey Seager, as we talked about coming into the series here, World Series MVP for the second time in four seasons, and for the second time in four seasons with games played in that stadium in Texas, because that was the neutral site of the 2020 World Series when he was the MVP of the Dodgers when they won it. So Corey Seager is etching himself as one of the finest clutch players of this generation. So combine that with his regular season prowess, and absolutely, he is steaming towards probably a first ballot Hall of Fame induction at this point. And as far as what Ken was talking about, Joe, as far as the lineup construction and everything like that, did you guess correctly on where he was going with that? And if not, where'd you think he was going with that?
No, that's exactly where I thought he was going with that. I mean, look at that lineup up and down. I mean, that's, and I know that, folks are going, well, they won 90 games and they kind of then started to make their run. But I mean, imagine if DeGrom was healthy.
Right.
And like Scherzer was healthy. I mean, that team's stacked. That team is just stacked. And they have guys that play, their best under the lights and under the stage. And I mean, it was just, Simeon had like five RBIs in game four.
Yeah.
I mean, he had a two-run triple, a three-run homer. Another guy like that comes up huge. I mean, they were taking turns. But I mean, Garcia, I think he finished after, I think, game two or three with the side oblique injury, but he finished with, like, 22 RBIs. Like, I think that's a record. I mean, just and then, again, he goes down and gets a sinker. It was a 3-1 sinker, which I thought was a good pitch, and he went with it. Yeah. Like, our guy, we're trying to pull it and hit it into the upper deck, blah, blah, blah. That's what I mean, the difference in watching these guys in that game one and the rest of the series. He just went with the pitch. He went down. He got a nice 3-1 sinker. I thought it was a very good pitch. But you're not going to throw him anything to hit. And boom, he hits it the opposite way. I mean, what are you going to do? That's when you just kind of, shrug. You just throw your hands up.
Trying to
put him on base,
Well, and this is one of these things where, again, situationally, certain guys rising to the moment and being right there in October, I mean, when you talk about this again, as far as Texas is pitching, part of it is one of the things that they're depending on, a little bit of a hope and a prayer here, that Nathan Eovaldi, for a guy who is capable of being a very good pitcher, but, I mean, he's had his ups and downs in his career, and consistency has not always been his friend. But, I mean, this is a guy that was basically more or less figuratively putting on the Garrett Anderson costume for Halloween here because, he showed up in October, and the same way that Garrett Anderson was arguably the best player on the Angels in 2002, leading that team to the World Series, this is a better team to be sure. That Angels team was ironically probably closer to the Diamondbacks as far as that goes. Although even that Angels team, with all due respect to Tim Salmon, they didn't have anybody like Corbin Carroll on that squad. But, Texas, that's one of those things where, again, you couldn't have necessarily seen at the beginning of the year, and it's one of the reasons I think they were 50-1 to get to the World Series. You couldn't have seen that Evan Carter, great prospect though he is, similar to Corbin Carroll, was going to come in and make an immediate impact down the stretch. that Josh Jung, just getting handed the job at third base there, was going to come in and make the impact that he did. More so, I think, in the first half than in the second half, but still, he came in and was a star. And then Garcia putting up the 39 home runs in the regular season. But, Ken, to the point that Joe made about Texas's pitching, and again, you know, Scherzer and DeGrom and that, we add Garcia to that in the World Series. The fact that it could well have been a turning point. Texas loses him, in needing to win two more games in the World Series, 2-1. All Arizona's got to do is defend their home field in games 4 and 5, and they've proven they can win on the road. So that felt like it could have been the turning point right there. It was decisive that Arizona couldn't win that next game, because with Garcia being out of there, that could have been a gut punch to Texas, would have been to many other teams. But when you look at it again here, when I say that Texas was most definitely the better team than Arizona, I think, Ken, they proved it by doing it not even remotely at full strength, particularly in the last two games of the series.
Yeah, I looked at the rosters again, and it's still, I don't get how they got here.
Yeah.
Some of this stuff. I mean, Scherzer, again, I'm just not being an armchair coach here, I guess, because you said it right, Eovaldi, really? Him and Montgomery, well, they both did a great job.
Sure.
But you got Dunning. Are you kidding me?
Yeah.
John Gray came in and saved their bucket there a number of times, it seemed. I thought, well, thank God they got him. But like you said, Joe, there was no Jacob DeGrom out there for them.
Well, it's like, wow, really?
What if they pick somebody up? And what if they, here's a real thought. What if they had a bullpen? I mean, honestly, both teams for that matter. I was not impressed with either bullpen at all. I'm thinking, my goodness. But that's just me. It's a head scratcher. It was fun to watch because I was pulling for it, as we all were. We picked them. But I did a lot of business down there in Texas many years ago. And would go and watch, get tickets from some of my clients that would say, hey, Ken, go watch a game. Go watch, you know, down in Arlington down there. Not the new stadium, but the older one. And watch these games and stuff. And it was just like, okay. But it was like, so I was kind of pulling for them from that respect because they had never won a World Series. And that was awesome for them.
Yeah, and again, I go back to watching 2011 because I live vicariously. They were one strike away twice. We talked about this in the ninth inning when Ron Washington was the coach, the manager, and David, I forget what happened on the first one, but David Freese hits the double to right to tie, then the 10th, he hits the home run, they win in game 7. So I remember thinking, oh, talk about that's the ultimate gut punch. I think they lost in 2010 to the Bochy's Giants, who knocked off the Phillies that year. But then, and then they went in 2012, and then it's been a while. So, and you know what? I just thought that they had that kind of, listen, they're getting no hit in a World Series game in the 7th inning by a pitcher who's been pretty good this year, in Jack Gowan, a local kid. And then, you know, Seager, again, he hits one off the nub down to the, you know, down the left field line a little bit. And that kind of opened the door a little bit, a couple more hits. They got one run in, and they broke it open in the ninth. But until then, Eovaldi was getting in and out of jams. I mean, Arizona looked like, again, admit it, feel like, look, I know how these guys feel because they were 0-9 with runners in scoring position. He just kept getting in and out of trouble and just keeping it close long enough for his guys to get to Gallen. I thought that was pretty impressive.
It was. Yeah. You know, I think as far as, you know, the ultimate gut punch there, Joe Davis did the cute little thing of referencing there at the end of the game, Texas is one strike away again.
He did. I noticed that. See, I don't know. I know you guys knew that, but I wasn't sure how many other people would have gotten that. I'm not sure from, like, Texas, but I'm like, I remember. Yeah, he's got it. That was cute. Good job, Rick.
Yeah.
Pulling that up. I remember you said that.
Good job. I didn't even notice that. No,
yeah. I was impressed that who was the announcer? He knew that. I thought that was good.
That was a good moment. But that's the thing. Here's the thing that I can always gauge. It's like when somebody that you don't expect will reference a moment like that. FDH Lounge dignitary Ben Chu, being younger than us, not a real baseball guy. There is that generational cutoff, it seems. But Ben knows that. Ben will reference that to me once in a while, that Texas was one strike away. So it's like, I always figure, okay, if he knows that, it must be relatively well known out there for it to have penetrated to millennial Ben. But as far as this whole thing goes, too, by the way, ultimate gut punch, you're saying there, Joe. In the news here recently, Craig Counsell moving from Milwaukee to Chicago. So the guy who beat the Indians in the 97 World Series and moving to the team who beat them in the 2016 World Series, people from Cleveland might perhaps wish to question whether Texas had the ultimate gut punch 12 years ago, particularly since it only took 12 more years to basically erase that. But funny how, by the way, it seems like every city eventually within a generation or so, would you have thought when the ball went through Bill Buckner's legs that it would take only, quote unquote, 18 years for Boston to win it all? It probably felt like it'd be another 50 or 60 by the time it happens. Here in Cleveland, it's always
unbelievable.
Yeah, it's always 50 or 60 years away in Cleveland, but other cities, they get their, you know, they get their redemption eventually. In looking at this, you know, but in looking at history also, too, what we're talking about with Scherzer and with DeGrom, this must feel familiar to Bruce Bochy, because when he was in San Francisco, let us remember particularly, and I don't even remember if he was on the roster past the first championship, but what did Bruce Bochy ever manage to get out of Barry Zito? A big fat... So, you know, Bruce Bochy is used to having star pitchers that he's not able to get anything out of because they're broken down. Now, it remains to be seen if these guys are broken down for good or not. But the other lesson in San Francisco, and I don't think Bochy is having to tell the guys in the front office and ownership this, because I think they're smart enough to know this, is that San Francisco, when they came into that, again, the Bay Area is pretty gigantic, as we know. But San Francisco was not necessarily a big spender, even after opening what was initially Pac Bell Park, and I don't even know what they're calling it these days, but they became a spender after winning the 2010 World Series. That market was sort of like the sleeping giant that woke up. And I'm not saying that the Metroplex is not exactly a sleeping giant here, because they were already spending on this team. That's how they got Seager and Semien there in the first place to really get this thing going, to say nothing of signing DeGrom and trading for Scherzer. But I think we're going to see more of this. I don't necessarily mean that they're going to necessarily go out and get another big-time starting pitcher, because I think they're thinking Scherzer's going to be back okay next year. I think they'll take whatever they can get from DeGrom at this point, because he's certainly the more fragile of the two. But will they trade for anybody down the stretch? You betcha. They did it with Jordan Montgomery, and it paid a big dividend here this year for them. So in terms of looking ahead to next year, looking at these two teams here, I mean, the expectation, I think, is that Texas would make another run at the World Series, and I think that Arizona would make another run at the playoffs. And I think I would say that probably Arizona probably has a slightly better chance of making the playoffs than Texas does of returning to the World Series, but I don't necessarily know that it's a wide gap between the two. I'll start with you on this, Joe. What do you think?
Yeah. I think you're exactly right. That's how I look at it. You know, I don't think that, you know, like they're a major juggernaut, and you see, like, you know, Frisco won 3 in 5 years, and they had, you know, it was backed by Baumgartner and Lincecum and those guys. Mm-hmm. But no, I think this is one of those where, okay, the guys kind of, you had a mixture of some older guys and some guys that really just stepped up, and you had some, like, you're talking about the broken down bullpen, some of the starting pitching that, you know, managed to get through, and they brought in Montgomery, and they made some right moves to get it, and then they got hot, you know, and that happens. Arizona, 84 wins, the last game of the season, they had to get in, and they were, like, I think the worst third wild card spot, and then they went on a tear, but I don't see that team as, like, I see that they're 84 wins. I don't see them all of a sudden, because they went to the World Series, jumping up to like 95 wins. I just think that they might be one of those teams in the mix again to get into the playoffs. I kind of thought the Phillies were the same thing. They were going to be in the mix to get into the playoffs again, and I didn't think anything more than what it was last year. They got hot, but I knew the team still does this. They do exactly what they did this year, last year. Like, they do that. We shouldn't have been that surprised, although it was on a much bigger scale that we collapsed this year. But because I think they still have issues starting pitching, and they could use a piece here or there. But I thought that they would, and they did, and they got in by a pretty wide margin with their wild card. But I think you're going to see the same thing. But exactly what you said, I agree with, in terms of getting back to the World Series for the Rangers and, you know, maybe sniffing the playoffs for the Diamondbacks, Rick.
That's kind of what I'm thinking, yeah. And if Arizona wants to make it back, if they want to be a team that looks likely to make it on paper, which they never were at any point this year, even though they actually made it
right.
there, then I would
right.
say another frontline starting pitcher and a little bit more starting lineup depth, particularly middle of the order. You know, if they could get another big bat, another big arm, I think we could be looking at them making a very serious run. But again, you know, Atlanta's not going anywhere. Philadelphia's not going anywhere. Cincinnati is on the come up in a big way. I don't know if it'll happen next year or not, but a lot of obstacles in the National League there for Atlanta. Ken, do you kind of agree with us here that, again, the expectation for Texas would be getting back to the World Series and the hope for Arizona would be getting back to the playoffs?
Yeah, I would do a yard sale with their pitching staff, though, as far as that goes. I'm just not a fan. I mean, Scherzer, maybe. I mean, you know, he's up there in age now.
Right.
So,
yeah.
And who knows about Montgomery? Is he a free agent, I thought?
I believe so. Yeah.
So, you know, who's not going to say that he's just going to go bye-bye? I would hope he would stay, because I thought I was impressed with him. And but yeah, and they're loaded with their hitting. They put the money in that. And their catalyst, Garcia. I think if he goes, they go. He had to be in their ear all the time. I don't think the guy ever shuts up, or he's always taking fights and doing stuff all the time. And you need somebody like that on a team.
Yeah.
You know, feeling to you, Joe, they had that. You know, they had a couple guys. It just didn't work out for them this time. And because I thought Philly was going to take it all this year, because I thought they were hungry.
They had that look. They really did have that look. I did too. Certainly when they rolled through Atlanta, and look, they had historic numbers over an 8-game stretch. They outscored their opponents by a bigger margin than any 8-game stretch in playoff history. They were bombing away. Their starting pitching was fantastic, like 1.72 ERA. And then, you know, the wheels came off. What can I say? It's Philly.
Well,
yeah. And I just, go ahead. I'm sorry.
No, go ahead. Go ahead, Ken.
I was just going to say, as far as the rest of the pitching, other than Pedro Martinez just kissing the ring finger of Jose Leclerc, it's like, I don't get it with him. I mean, he did a decent job, and so did Sewald. But they're not frontline guys.
Right.
And not even close, in my estimation, at the major league level. But those guys are rare. I understand that. But and that's where the coaching comes in, or the managing stuff. But I do like the rotation, and you guys alluded to this, with the Diamondbacks, with Gallen and Kelly, and if I'm saying his name right, Pfeff.
Yeah.
Those three guys, man, there's something there to build around. But it just didn't come out for them. And like you guys said, a couple bats here and there. But I was just also totally amazed how they shut down the running of the Diamondbacks, them being the Rangers.
Yeah,
exactly.
Yeah,
I thought that was going to be key for them, and it was just crickets for the most part.
Yeah, it was, and you know, in looking at this year, again, they have a nice starting rotation. If I'm Arizona, I think I'd like to have one more, at least borderline frontline arm in the mix there. But they have a lot. One more question I want to ask of you, Joe, is that as far as it goes with Philadelphia here, as far as lessons learned on this, is it a thing where, again, it seemed like on paper coming in that it was a relatively similar National League Championship Series to what it was last year, because San Diego was not necessarily at full strength coming in there. They'd beaten the Dodgers, but they kind of limped in aside from that, if it could be said, by a team that took out the Dodgers. And this Arizona team on paper looked even more overmatched. So is there a thing in terms of climbing towards the top of a lesson learned where it's like next year in the National League Championship Series, if they make it back there, there will be nothing taken for granted? Is this the kind of, I don't want to say necessary lesson that you need to have along the way? Because, I mean, you don't have to necessarily screw it up in the first place. You could just finish the job. But, I mean, it strikes me.
Why does there always have to be a lesson, right?
Well, exactly.
Do it right the first time, there's no lessons.
Exactly.
Yeah, no, not like Joe.
Great exactly. Job. Yes, we're all on the same page with that. But having happened, though, is there something to take from it? Because it seems like an easy lesson.
Absolutely. I think it was, to me, it was similar to what happened last year. And I don't think it was necessarily hubris last year. I mean, they did face an Astros team that had phenomenal pitching, although hitting 5 home runs in Game 3 of the World Series, leading 2-1. You know, and Citizens Bank Park, and there's a lot of energy there, and they have 2 more games there with a 2-1 lead, and not only do they not get a run the next game, they get no hit for the second time in the history of baseball, you know, so that was kind of a wake-up call, and they did nothing the rest of the way. I think similarly this year, although that was a much more formidable opponent, in my opinion, that was the World Series, but I thought they really took the Diamondbacks very lightly going back to Arizona. They sleptwalked through Game 3. The only run they scored was Bryce Harper on a wild pitch. That was the only run they scored. They gave up a late lead and lost in the ninth. It was a walk-off. And then the next game, they kind of sleptwalked again, and Christian Gonzalez started, I think, and he made some mental errors in the first inning, and then there was a throwing error, and then Bohm knocked in a couple runs, but then got nailed at second to make the first out of the inning, which was I said right there, that was stupid. I know they scored 2 runs and everyone's jumping up at that. That was a dumb play. You don't need to do that. It actually cost them another run. They ended up giving up a 3-run lead in that game, so then the series is tied. Then they kind of get it together, and they come back to Philly maybe thinking, and boom. I mean, this is the big leagues. You can't, I mean, the other guys, I always say this, the other guys get paid too. Check their payroll, check their tax returns. They get paid a lot of money to do this. You come in thinking you're this, that, and the other thing, and the home runs too. I mean, I know this team likes the home runs, and they kind of lived off it. I think they had as many as, I know the Braves shut it down after a while, but they had a lot in July and August, and they were winning by, you know, a lot of, and you know, it's exciting, and the place, you know, goes crazy, and Castellanos and with the bat flips and Harper's bombs and staring at Arcia. Again, it was cool. It was great. But then they went to Arizona and kind of just the energy dropped. And they thought that, well, even if we kind of, you know, we'll win a game or two here, you know, we'll come back. We still have 2. I think they just thought that there's going to be more time and we'll be fine. And guess what happens? You know, you run out of time. You run out of games.
Yeah, that happens. And Ken, I'm guessing from your multiple decades in coaching and managing here, I mean, you've probably been in circumstances where there are lessons that are a lot less obvious to draw from something like this here, that there's always something that you can look at and you can take for next year to help when you have something happen that's as shocking as that.
And these managers are going to keep their job, so they're going to, you know, build upon this. I mean, Bochy, I was shocked that he has a losing record overall. Did you know that?
That is surprising.
He has a losing record overall. Wins.
I did see that. I did see that.
I couldn't. I thought I heard
that. What?
I was walking by the TV and I heard that. And I was like, okay, I'll go come back and check on that. I can't believe that I heard that right.
Amazing.
It is. It is. Yeah, well,
he's under 500.
There were a lot of lean post Tony Gwynn years in San Diego, and then I think they may not have had a winning record during that dynasty, if you want to call it that. 3 titles in 5 years. The odd years were kind of tough. So I'm still struggling in my head to piece together what you just said. But, yeah, I mean, in the years after the championships, I know he was under 500 a couple of times. And this is one of the things where, I mean, when he retired, I don't know that there was necessarily anybody in that front office that was trying to talk him out of it, because this is a what have you done for me lately kind of a business. But boy, do they have to be regretting not having tried to talk him out of it, because allegedly not having tried based on what he did there. But again, if you're looking for a Bruce Bochy-esque combination of guys to break down baseball with, you could do no better than this with Ken Detweiler and our good friend Joe Stazek, two of our favorite FDH Lounge dignitaries. We will be convening, I think, in the near future with what has been our most frequent baseball troika over the years, Ken Detweiler, Steve Callis, and myself, to break down the 2023 Major League Baseball season and take an early look here at the offseason. But, gentlemen, I can't thank you both enough for being here. It was awesome, as always. Thank you both. Thank you, everybody.
Always appreciate it, guys.
Oh, thanks, Joe. And thank you, everybody, for checking out FDH Lounge Mini Episode 1671.